You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Into a Sunday, late afternoon, early evening edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I'm your host, Gavin Shaw, fresh off calling the PSAL Borough Championship games, and I don't want to say some of those teams would beat the Nets, but I don't want to rule it out either. There were a couple in Brooklyn. Shout out to South Shore. They're very good. Anyways, broadcast some games last night, covered the Phoenix Suns in the past. Y'all know the deal. And I'm alongside the businessman, Joshua Bass. Josh, how you doing?
I hate that you call me that.
But, well, come up with something better. Give me something. I mean, you know, I'm going to say something. So you got to...
We'll work on this offline.
But you can't create your own nickname. Well, we'll figure it out.
Exactly. Doing well. Dame Witty winning the skills challenge was probably made my night, honestly.
Yeah, you were pretty hyped in our group. There were like a couple of like all caps texts like throughout. And there were like a few moments like where he almost lost. Like it took like Jamal Murray missing a few threes, Buddy Hield. The NBA's best bench three-point shooter missing a three-pointer. So
why was he not in the three-point contest? Because he was already there. So like,
yeah, I don't know why Paul George was in it and he wasn't.
Yeah, we'll get into this later. But I have problems with the people they selected because it wasn't the best three-point shooters. It was just like all stars that happened to be good three-point shooters.
Yeah, I agree.
Like Wayne Ellington was a good example of people they should have because he's actually a very good three-point shooter, and that's his one thing.
Yeah,
but people like Paul George and.
Kyle
Lowry, like they don't need to be in there.
I don't know. I'm of the opinion that like if you're in the All-Star game, like with the exception of like, you know what? No, I'll even include that. If you're in the All-Star game, you probably shouldn't be doing anything else. Like if an All-Star wants to do the dunk contest, that's awesome. But All-Stars never want to do the dunk contest.
Oladipo.
Oh yeah, I guess that's fair. I mean, I guess like super duper stars never. But I don't know. Like I think like if you're in like the game, like and maybe it's like. I don't even know like what the logistical issue would be. Like just like let other people shine. Like someone like Joe Harris, who's like not obviously like the most popular name, like he would have been great in the 3-point contest. Or Buddy Hield. Like those guys
or
like
Markkanen also. He was there.
Yeah, Markkanen would have been great too, and like really deserving of it with like how incredible he's like had like one of the best rookie 3-point shooting seasons ever, I think, if not the best in NBA history. So he'd be a really good fit. And the thing is like those guys would be like so excited about it, and they'd put like a ton of time in practicing. Like you can't tell me Paul George was like practicing for this and really gave a shit like if he did well or did poorly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he wants to go out and compete because he's a competitor, but
yeah, but I mean, like
the most fluid stroke. Like, I don't know. I think you have to have the best 3-point shooters there. I would rather have a Kyle Korver, Joe Harris there than see Kyle Lowry and Paul George because it's not like they're such big stars and big personalities that I need to see them.
Yeah, I'd like to see Harris do it, but I don't know. I don't know if he'd be that good just because. His form is so up and down. I feel like he'd get kind of tired by the end of it.
He has a lot of elevation on his form.
Yeah, I think Crabbe, the way he's shooting the last four games, would have done well. But obviously, he wasn't really deserving of it based on how he shot this season.
Great segue into the Nets.
Yeah. Oh, well, I want to keep talking about. I think D'Lo would have made one, maybe at most. If you let him take like five dribbles in, he could have hit a few.
Jared Allen from the corners.
Yeah, yeah. He would have been solid. But Mozgov would have been great.
While we're on this, can I just say that? I hate the idea of having the money ball rack.
Yeah.
Because it ruins the score. Like when Devin Booker had 28, obviously he's going to have the highest score in the last few years of all time because before that there weren't any money ball racks.
Well, but they were saying it was like the highest of like the money ball rack era. Like,
this is what they should have done.
It's a new era, Josh.
You have your five money balls, like one on each rack, like how it normally used to be. But instead you can take those five money balls and you can disperse them anywhere. So if you want, you can put all five in one rack. But if not, you can stick to the one in each rack. Like it was instead of adding five additional money balls.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And also, like the thing is, like the money balls, like at the end of each rack, like aren't like they lose their value, like when there's seven of them. Like when there's only five, that was like that created like a significant portion of the drama because like, oh, he has to make this to stay in it. But now it's like you miss like one or two at the end of racks. It's like, all right, you got these five coming up, and like really,
yeah,
like
it just comes down to the money.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah, and they have like a disproportionate effect on like who wins and who doesn't. What was I going to say? I liked, I think you didn't catch, like the end of like the dunk contest, did you?
I saw highlights of it. I was actually out during most of it.
Oh yeah. I forgot your social. Yeah. And you have friends and do stuff. No, that's cool, man. That's cool. What was I going to say? Yeah. They, like at the very end of the night, Brent Barry, who I dislike on air, but we'll talk about that at the end. He like asked Reggie Miller and Chris Webber, like, if they could make one change to All-Star Weekend, what would it be? And Reggie Miller suggested for the three-point contest, if they paired like every active player up with like a legend, and like they took turns going, and it was like in teams, and it was like the cumulative score, like it'd be like Peja Stojakovic and Buddy Hield on one team, and like Bogdan Bogdanovic and Reggie Miller on like another team.
It just like, sounds like the Shooting Stars, kind of.
Kind of, but like, but at least like, but I don't know. I think it'd be kind of cool to watch like the old guys like have to like go through Iraq, and like they're kind of out of shape, but like to see like if they still have it. Because like, I mean, that's like the Shooting Stars, like you get like a little bit of insight into that, but it's just like, it's like one like shot, which is, can be like kind of fluky. Like it'd be interesting to see like which guys like kind of retain their fluidity, but it's not like so taxing that it would like kill someone.
Yeah, I'm not into that idea.
Ah, okay. Well, I thought you were going to be so excited.
Your heroes, and I think it's always great. You have an image of someone in your mind, and let's say it's Peja Stojakovic. He's such a great three-point shooter, and then he goes out when he's 40 years old and hits 4 out of 15 shots or whatever.
No, but like, but that's
the ruins your perception of him.
But that's the whole thing. Like, these guys like don't lose their ability to shoot. Like, you heard stories of like 58-year-old Larry Bird like going down to the Pacers practice facility and draining like 23s in a row. Like, that's like I don't know, like I don't know if they'd get through like all the racks, but like these guys could still shoot. Like I think they'd be just fine and better.
Yeah, they
can than some
still shoot, but if they're, it's a timed event, I mean, you have to go quickly from one ball to the next and one rack to the next.
Yeah, really, but maybe they get like 90 seconds. I don't know.
It's a dumb idea.
Okay.
I don't like it.
All right.
Who suggested it? Brett
Berry? The Reggie Miller. And that's gonna, we'll just, we could end the podcast there. Oh yeah, but Spencer Dinwiddie winning the skills challenge, that was pretty cool. I said at the top, but I thought he was gonna lose in those first two rounds. And Markkanen was actually like really, really good going through, so I thought there could have been a little bit of a challenge there. And by the way, did you see that Joel Embiid like cheated during his run?
Yeah.
I thought that was great.
To troll.
Yeah. No.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's so funny.
But Markkanen has a good combination of, he can hit the three and he's also fast, especially compared to the other big guys. Like, why was Andre Drummond in it?
I didn't get that at all.
First attempt, but it was so weird.
I didn't even process it, and then he was like jogging up, and they were like, he hasn't made a three pointer this year, and I was like, what is he doing there?
Yeah, it was weird, and I think that if it was the old style where you just go one at a time and it's a timed event, he could have been there forever with a 3-point shot.
Yeah, no, it would have maybe lasted through All-Star Sunday, and they would have had to cancel everything else after. That was a little weird. Anyways, cool to see Dinwiddie ball out, get a little moment in the spotlight. I didn't necessarily love that, like the broadcasters after were like saying like, this is the Brooklyn Nets season, but then you you texted the same thing, so I was like, all right, it's cool.
Yeah, and I think that I hate that he wore the jersey with the whole name around the Brooklyn Nets, like around the entire jersey, because it's, I think it's our worst jersey.
Yeah.
So would have wanted us to go with a little something, maybe the Brooklyn Dodgers jersey that they used to wear.
Ooh.
The blue and gray.
I like that. All right, we're going to transition into talking about Wednesday's Pacers game. But before we do that, I wanted to, potentially for the last time of the season, tell you about Draft. Fantasy sports fans, listen up. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros. And it's not just me. More than 1 million people that have already downloaded Draft are enjoying it too. Play in a real live NBA draft right now. Be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use my promo code LONETS. That's right, play in a real money draft for free just by using my promo code LONETS. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're even offering Locked On Nets listeners a money-back guarantee up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play free right now with the promo code LONETS, LONETS. All right, let's talk Pacers, Josh. I'm losing count. This was the 12th loss in 13, maybe the 7th in a row, perhaps?
Yeah, 7th in a row.
Good. Okay. All right.
That's
pretty exciting. Better lottery position. Nets are all the way up to, I think, what, the fourth worst record in the NBA now? They're somewhere in that range.
I know there's a huge morass at the top of think it's the Nets in there. Obviously, the Hawks, Sacramento.
Yeah, Orlando, Atlanta, Phoenix, Dallas. There's actually still seven teams worse. Right, but it's only one game because there's six teams with 18 wins. That's crazy.
I think that they'll probably finish the year in the seventh or eighth spot because all these teams like the Bulls are just going to start tanking and already have, actually.
Yeah, and plus the Knicks might end up being worse than them. That'll be pretty close. We're playing Luke Kornet big minutes right now, right?
Kornetty Wop.
Yeah.
He has four. They already have four more wins than the Nets, so it's going to be hard to make that up in such a short period of time. But I think with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson coming back and Caris LeVert coming back as well, hopefully soon. I mean, we're not going to get any information about that because the Nets are the Nets in that sense. Yeah. But I think they if they're not back by the Charlotte game on Thursday, then something's seriously wrong because they would have had 3 weeks by then to recover, and the team does not tell us anything about what's happening, and it's frustrating, especially after they have a complete week off at the All-Star break. If they're not going to be back, I'm going to be upset.
Yeah, I put some thought into that, and obviously, I'm not going to, judge your frustration because, I understand it, but, my theory on it is it's just an element of them trying to be player first, and again, putting a reasonable timeline on a guy, I don't think should put pressure on him to come back quickly, especially if you put a timeline out, you can always add an extra 2 weeks to it and, really have a cushion, so I think that would be, the responsible thing to do. But I think by putting out no injury information whatsoever, they're not, in their minds, they're just taking, any, artificial pressure on players to come back. But you could argue that, backfires because then people spend more time talking about it when they have literally no clue when guys are going to come back. So I don't know, but I think that maybe is what they're trying to do with that.
Yeah, and if they said it's going to be 3 or 4 weeks for LeVert and RHJ, then I'm fine with that, and I won't think about it for the next 2 or 3 weeks until they actually get close to coming back. But when you don't say anything, I'm going to be checking every game, being like, what's happening? What's the deal? Why aren't they telling us any information? So just put something out there. Even if it's a conservative timeline, that's fine, as long as it's giving some structure and guidance to the fans.
What's the deal with LeVert? Because wasn't it just a concussion? I mean, obviously, no,
it was concussion/knee, and now it's just knee.
Okay, good. I'm glad. So I'm glad that's out of the way.
If it was a 3 week concussion, that would be obviously very scary.
Yeah.
Any concussion's scary.
Yeah.
Even though our president might not think so. But yeah, I think it's just the knee at this point, and he's had some injury problems at Michigan. So good to be conservative with him, but at the same time, I want to see him back on the floor and see how he's going to mesh with the rest of the team now that D'Lo's starting to get up to form a little bit with a solid game against Indiana.
Yeah, and that's a good transition into talking about the Pacers game. And this one, the rotation particularly short with, in addition to RHJ and LeVert being out, also no Stauskas, no Jahlil Okafor. So we got some quality Mozgov minutes, and I know you were really excited about seeing the big Russian back out there.
It was just so weird because the Nets ended the third quarter, had great momentum. They were up, I think by six at the end of the third.
Yeah, it was a 16-0 run to get there.
And then Mozgov just starts the fourth quarter, kills all momentum, misses two shots that are very easy right next to the basket. And he's someone that he sucks at posting up, yet he always tries to do it. He's always trying to get good post position, and he's very good at that because he's 300 pounds and 7'1". So when he's so close to the basket, people are just going to throw it to him, and he can't finish at all. And he really killed the momentum there. And not sure what Kenny Atkinson's thinking, because when the Nets are getting blown out by the Clippers, Mozgov's nowhere to be found. And now that they have a winnable game, they're up by six against a pretty good Indiana team, he says, oh, now's the time to put Mozgov in. Jared Allen only finished with 20 minutes on the night, and he was pretty bad on defense, getting abused by guys like Al Jefferson and Sabonis.
Al Jefferson torched him.
Yeah, and I thought he was just caught in between of whether to keep sliding his feet on plays and or trying to go up for the block. But still, he's so much better than Mozgov. You have to put him out there for those 4 minutes. At least on offense, he's going to be a lot better. And he'll only finish with 24 minutes on the night, and you have AC playing some center and some small guys in there. So there's just no need to play Mozgov and ruin all of your momentum.
Yeah, no, I can't argue with that. I mean, yeah, I don't know. The argument would be you want to throw Mozgov a bone if he's working his butt off in practice. But as you said, the time to do that is in a blowout. It's not against the Pacers, and as you said, an extremely winnable game. So Now, I'm just as confused as you are. I mean, I guess the only point I would throw out there is I think this plays into my theory that there is an in-house minutes restriction on Jared Allen, and like obviously it's not
– 4 minutes is going to make a difference.
I mean, I'm not making that case, but I mean like there's a reason like teams are like so strict with this stuff because like presumably it's based on injury data and like what the tipping point for specific guys, and if they set like specific guidelines in a year they're not going to make the playoffs anyways, like I mean maybe – that's their rationale for it. Again, that's me playing.
Both wins, though.
And that's just me playing devil's advocate. So I'm not beholden to the point. That would just be like my theory on like why they would put Mozgov out there for a couple minutes. I'm 100% with you. I think it slowed them down quite a bit. This, though, an encouraging game on a couple fronts, particularly the play of D'Angelo Russell, who was pretty poor on defense, I thought, and like still had his moments where he wasn't that good on that end. But 18 points, 9 assists. Shot it really well. I know this is counter to the point that like he played a good game, but like I thought he partially cost them the game in the final few minutes, like by missing an open layup and then taking a really bad three that didn't have much of a chance to go in, and giving Indiana a chance to cut into and eventually overtake the Nets in those final 3 minutes. But I thought he was good overall, and then Allen Crabbe continued to play really, really well and look like a completely different player shooting the basketball, 24 points, 8 rebounds.
That was awesome. And I think on defense also, him and Dinwiddie both did a pretty good job on Oladipo. Obviously, Oladipo's a great player and he kind of got going at the end, but still forcing him into a 9 of 24 shooting performance is a good job done. And then, Crabbe was just heating up. I mean, he's really just gunning threes. And 5 of 11, it's great volume, it's great percentage. And hopefully that we can see more of that in the future because it looks like he has some confidence right now.
Yeah, you did text me towards the end of the game, we're crab people now, and I immediately got a hat with that phrase written on it out of my closet, put it on, haven't taken it off since. So, yeah, I'm fairly excited. What really got me going, and like obviously like the three-point shooting is the biggest story out of his recent play, but it seems to have gotten his confidence up, and he got a big switched on to him. I think it was Thaddeus Young, and he like took him right off the dribble, had a nice finish. And he had another play where he was like driving on like a guard, and like someone came over to contest, and he went like up and under, took some contact, and put it in. And like I remember like a couple games back, I think it was like when it was Allen Crabbe night at the Barclays Center, which if they had done that 10 days ago, I think you might have mutinied and tried to burn it down the entire building. But before that, they showed some of his college highlights at Cal, and I was like stunned by like how explosive he looked going to the basket. Because like even when he's driven this year, like you could just tell he's always like a little bit tentative. But he was so aggressive attacking the basket, and I thought it was really awesome to see.
Yeah, and he's 17 for 26 on 2-point attempts in his last 4 games, and that's like 65%. So he's done a really nice job getting to the basket and complementing with his 3-point shooting, which I think has been around 40-45% his last few games. He's been a very good scorer. Also, we need to talk about Damari Carroll's performance because he really got going with some contested threes that I didn't think were good shots, but if they go in, they go in. I think he hit 5 threes on the night in total. He was a big part of that third quarter comeback.
Yeah, no, the whole first half, I was like, I was like, they gotta like figure out a way to improve like the Damari spot, because he was just, I think like it's kind of symptomatic of like a lot of the Nets' problems, like outside of Joe Harris and like Allen Crabbe of late, like they just never really have that much activity off the ball. And like I think I specifically wrote down like you can't play like you're the Houston Rockets, like, and obviously like what they like to do is like let James Harden and Chris Paul ISO and surround them by 3 elite shooters who can hit from up to like 25, 26 feet. And that works because you have 2 of the best ball handlers and guys at getting to the rim to ever play the game. With Spencer Dinwiddie and D'Angelo Russell, as solid as they are offensively, like I don't think that's a winning strategy. Like I think when the Nets are successful, it's because everyone's playing with a lot of energy and everyone's bouncing around and you're getting ball and player movement in conjunction. And I think that's absolutely a necessity for a team with the talent deficiency the Nets have. And in the first half, they were staying in it because Indiana wasn't shooting that well. And I guess you got to give the Nets some credit on that front. But the offense was just so frustrating to watch. And I thought Damari Carroll like kind of epitomized that to me, because it seemed like all he wanted to do was hang around the perimeter and like take contested threes. And obviously like they started dropping in the second half and he was like absolutely electric shooting the 3-ball. But I don't want results to rule over process. And I'm still like generally like kind of unhappy with how he played, even though obviously he had a good game just because the shots went in.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting point because in Atlanta, I don't remember him being this type of player. I thought he was more of like a cutter.
He was an energy guy. Yeah.
Yeah, pick up points off of offensive rebounds and do stuff like that. And it really seems like he's changed his game to be almost exclusively perimeter oriented at this point.
Like, and even when he drives guys, like, it's almost like occasionally he'll do it, like, where like someone's recovering on defense and he'll just go right by them. But a lot of the times it's like a slow burn and like he'll face a guy up, wait a couple seconds, and then like make his move and like try to bully into him. And he's like been like semi-effective on those plays. But I just like, I don't know. I get like, I think that's a good point in turn. Like he was definitely a different guy on the Hawks. So I get kind of frustrated watching him.
Yeah. And not to say that he's even close to the biggest problem on this team, because there's a lot.
No, obviously not.
A solution. And obviously the trade to get him was excellent because he's been a solid player, not worth, I guess he's making $15 million a year. He's probably someone I would pay 8 to 10 if he was on the open market right now for next season. But getting a first-round pick and also getting off Justice Hamilton's contract was good for the Nets. But, yeah, just needs to kind of improve his what he's doing on the court, because I'm looking at his stats now. His mid-range shooting is absolutely terrible, and that's really what's dragging down his field goal percentage to 40%.
Yeah, and obviously, like, I mean, those issues stand out a lot more when you don't have a Caris LeVert and you don't have a Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, and you're relying on him for such a significant portion of your offense. It really starts to become glaring. I don't know. Did you actually know, before we start winding things down, I wanted to quickly mention, maybe follow us on social media a little bit more. I know I say that at every podcast, but it's worth mentioning, rate and review. If you can, it really does help us out. We really appreciate it. So thanks for doing that and continue to do it.
Yeah, we're going to start. I know we always say this, but start live tweeting games more, give you some good insight that we might not be discussing on the pod because it just kind of gets lost in the shuffle. So if you want to learn about that second quarter pick and roll defense coverage, we can talk about that and all that stuff, all that good stuff.
Yeah, because here's the thing. Like, every time I said that in the past, I still had a full-time job. Now, I don't have a full-time job. My full-time job is you guys. Text me any time of the night or the day. Do I ever put out my number?
DMs are always open.
Yeah, that's okay, that's fair. Yeah, DMs are always open. All right, let's get back to the podcast. All right, so just kind of winding things down with this one. I don't know, like, I told Josh this before we started recording, but I wasn't that excited to talk about this game. Because, again, it's just what we've seen, like, this whole losing streak. Like, the Nets keep it close. Like, credit to them by not getting down by, like, 20 to 25 in this one. Like, I think that was as much of a product of the Pacers not shooting that well as anything else. But it just, like, they're, like, ending, like, it almost felt, like, kind of inevitable. Like, I wanted to be, like, disappointed in, like, the Nets' inability to close this out, but it's just been so typical of what we've seen the last month and a half. The Nets still haven't won a game in February, so I wasn't really surprised with it.
Yeah, and it wasn't any horrible mistakes. It was just they were playing a much better team, and I'm also not really sure that how Indiana's so good. I think it's just because, like, none of their top seven or eight guys are that bad. They just have everyone that's kind of average, and then Turner's good, and Oladipo's is very good, even bordering on excellent. So that's kind of where their success comes from. But it was a problem. I think also the turnovers, they finished with 13 turnovers in the game, but I think 9 of those were in the second half. And it's just dumb things like illegal screens and not taking care of the ball. And when you don't have a lot of talent, there's not a lot of room for error. You can't be turning the ball over that constantly.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And on the Pacers' point, they kind of remind me as like a poor man's version of that Nuggets team from like 5 years ago, like right before Iguodala left for Golden State.
Who was the best player on that team?
It was Iguodala, I would say.
Yeah, it was like him, Gallo, Wilson Chandler.
Fareed, yeah, Jameer Nelson.
Was Marcus Camby still on that team, or he had retired?
Maybe. No, I think he might have been. Like, I don't know. That was a great – that was a really – that was like the best –
still there, I think.
That was like the best possible version of that team. And then I think the Warriors like upset them in the first round. And that was kind of the birth of Golden State. And that was the first time like people were like, oh, Steph Curry might be really, really, really good. Yeah, so that was an exciting time. And then they're kind of now like the Eastern Conference version of like what the Clippers are after that Pistons trade, where they just have like a bunch of guys who are solid. And you know what? I think those teams are good for the NBA. Like teams that aren't like really like superstar driven, and you just have like a bunch of dudes. Like you're not going to win a title with that team because there are teams like the Warriors that have superstars and have that depth. But, like, I don't know. Like, on a night-to-night basis, they're really fun to watch. And I think I can only imagine, like, players like being able to play in that system because, like, no one has to carry, like, that exceptional of a role, but everyone's involved simultaneously. So it just feels like a really good environment.
I lost him on that team and Mozgov.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I remember Lawson was kind of the driving force.
Lawson. That's the guy I forgot. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, they had good depth. And I think that's a good point that.
I just realized Ty Lawson's out of the NBA. That's crazy.
I think he's going on a tryout with the Wizards, maybe?
That's so weird. Yeah. How did he. I know he had the DUI.
The drinking problem.
Oh, was it like. I know he had the DUI. I guess so. He's like an alcoholic.
Yeah, he needed serious help, and I'm not sure if he's gotten that yet. But he was a very exciting player. I think I used to be a big North Carolina fan. And he was probably my favorite player in all of North Carolina history.
Yeah, him, Wayne Ellington, and Tyler Hansbrough, Psycho T,
mm-hmm.
on the same team.
And Danny Green was on that team.
Yeah, oh yeah, and they played Blake Griffin, and they won by like 10, but Blake Griffin unpantsed Tyler Hansbrough, and it was awesome to watch. Anyways, so that's like essentially all I had to say about that game.
Yeah, playing Whitehead also.
What did you say?
Got some time in that game, Whitehead.
Whitehead? No, he definitely could. Like, especially, like, because they, like, had, like, such a tight rotation at the guard spot. Like, I can't believe, like, Alan Crabb ended up playing 36 minutes. Dinwiddie played 33, even though he literally didn't hit a shot from the field. So, yeah, they could have.
He did pretty bad. I mean, he did have 10 free throw attempts.
Yeah.
And his game was solid. But, come on, you can't go 0 of 7 from the field.
All right, tell him that next time you see him. Just be like,
no, I mean, Dinwiddie. He's my favorite player, and I'm happy he got a lot of attention for the skills challenge because his story is great, and also he's one of the most thoughtful players, extremely charismatic and well-spoken, and I think he's someone that's going to have start to get into the spotlight a little bit more, and obviously it's happening as he was a major talk around the trade deadline, but happy to see him getting his due because he's a great guy.
Yeah, I'm going to try and, like... It's very much a long shot, but I'd love to get him on the podcast over the summer and just do like 10 minutes on Dragon Ball Z with him. Like I get like we'll do you and me will do like the full podcast with him, and then I'll let you like log off, and then me and him will just talk some DBZ for about 10 minutes. I think people will really dig that. I think Letor No might tune in for that.
Go.
He's our target audience. All right. Okay. We haven't done it in about 2 months. So the grand unveiling of what grinds my gears. Josh, I've given you 2 months of utter happiness. What are you upset about these days?
Yeah, so a few things from All-Star Weekend ticked me off. We obviously spoke about the Moneyball rack before, but also players only. It sucks because here's the thing. There's a reason that there's always a host there. I mean, there's a reason that people like Ernie Johnson and Mike Breen have a job because it keeps things structured and organized. And these shows are always better when there's structure and it's not just four guys talking over each other. And no one, it's like the players obviously have the most knowledge about the game, and that's fine. But there's a reason these studio hosts were brought in the first place. And I think that just getting rid of them just makes it so weird. And I forget where I heard this, but I think it might have been Bill Simmons saying that someone on the players only broadcast always takes the role of a play-by-play guy.
Yeah.
But there's not as good as play-by-play. And announcing what's happening as the other guys.
That's the part that really gets me. Like I'm a broadcaster. I did like a lot of anchoring, a lot of like studio show hosting in college. So like I'm always gonna stand up for that side of it. But even beyond that, like if you want to have a players only show, it has to be from the angle of like these guys are hanging out on the couch and they're just reacting to what they see. And I actually like during the skills challenge, like I think they actually like captured that like pretty well. Like it was just like Dwayne Wade like clowning around and being like, I think he like at one point he had like a line and he's like, you know what, I'm just gonna like become a skills challenge coach like at the end of my career, like that's gonna be great. And it was like the guys like talking about who they're predicting and like going back and forth and like complaining, like in that environment, like an all-star setting, like I think it's great, and I think like it brings out like the best possible like tendencies in the players to like have fun with it and just chill. But when someone like Brent Barry, who's significantly worse than like just like the average like college radio guy, not even comparable to the guys that make it in the NBA and the guy who call games in the league, if he's like describing the game to me, I don't know, I think ultimately like having that guy there, it just kind of cheapens the product, and it is frustrating to watch.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, I'm not blaming Brent Berry because he's, I think, a good color analyst, but he shouldn't be announcing everything that's happening and doing play-by-play.
Yeah.
So yeah, players only pissed me off. And then also at the three-point shootout, they had this technology at the bottom of the screen that was showing you where the ball, if it went in, where it was going in the basket, and also where they were missing, either front, left, short, long. And just no one cares about that. When you're watching the three-point shootout, you're watching the guy pick up the ball and you're seeing if it goes in or not. You're not like, oh, did he miss left or right? Like, no one cares. It's not like you're analyzing film after. So I thought it was completely worthless, and me and my friends were just making fun of that the entire three-point shootout.
All right, Josh, I'm glad to hear you are once again upset with life and have something to be angry about. I encourage you to I know this is, it sounds a little bit like a Darth Sidious to Darth Vader speech, but you know what, Josh? Harness your anger. Use it productively. And we'll be back soon on the Locked On Nets podcast. Maybe not that soon because the team doesn't play a game till Thursday. But between now and then, maybe we'll have a guest on. Maybe not. I don't actually have anything planned yet, so don't hold me to that. But I will try to make it happen for you guys, especially now that we both, or at least I, have a lot more time to plan this. So for now, be good. Peace out.